Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is the time and place for the ad hoc meeting of the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission. I'm Dusty Johnson. Joining me here today are Commissioners Gary Hansen and Steve Kolbeck. We have a relatively brief agenda. We'll move right into it. Item number one, TC06-007, a petition by Level 3 Communications. The question before the commission today is, shall the commission grant the motion to dismiss? I understand we may have some a delay on action on this. Anyone from staff wish to elaborate?
Yes, this is for Lane Wiest. It's my understanding that Quest has requested deferral of this item, and I believe Mr. Thompson is on the line.
Okay. Well, that's right. We should probably have taken attendance on the phone lines. Mr. Thompson, are you on the line? George Thompson from Quest? Not hearing Mr. Thompson. How about Mary Lonis from Mid-Continent?
Here, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks. August Ankum from a consultant for Mid-Continent?
Present.
Wonderful. Anyone else on the phone line joining us?
Tom Simmons with Mid-Continent.
Great. I didn't think you'd miss it, Tom.
Not a chance, Mr. Chairman.
Anyone else on the phone line? Hearing none, we'll ask once more for Mr. Thompson. Ms. Wiest, do you think we would have any concerns about deferring action on this item without hearing from Quest?
No. It's my understanding that they were the ones that requested it, and perhaps Mr. Thompson decided not to be on just because he knew he had told staff he wanted it deferred.
Okay, great. Any questions by commissioners or advisors? Any comments? Any action?
I'm motion to defer item TC06-007.
Motion has been made. It requires no second. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Hansen?
Aye.
Kolbeck?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. Our second item on the agenda is TC07-117. It deals with Mid-Continent's communications request for approval of its switched access rates. Today, the commission is scheduled for a decision. We have not will not be having oral arguments, but I suppose if anybody, if any commissioners have any questions for any of the parties, this would be an appropriate juncture to do so. Hearing no questions, is there any discussion or action by any commissioners? We're pausing as a commissioner gets some commentary from an advisor.
Mr. Smith was bringing up a few points on some of the things that we had looked at, and it prompted me to look at my notes on a variety of items that I'm not quite certain where to start, but it might prompt some pertinent discussion. I've been wrestling with the, this is almost like a tar baby, if I can use an analogy of, to an extent, looking back at what has been done in the past and trying to figure out whether or not do we look at, do we have all of the information that we need? It would certainly appear that we do. On the other hand, it appears that we're relying, or at least there's a request for us to rely upon some information that I don't know is sufficient. When we look at making a decision based upon the cost study that we have, I don't know that the cost study that we're asked to rely upon is sufficient, and I don't know that staff has had sufficient opportunity to really examine that and compare it. So I'd like a little bit of discussion on that. Anna, forgive me. I shouldn't have eaten some of those chips just before I ran up here. I'd like some of the staff's comment on that if they would, just from a standpoint of making a decision based upon, no, we'll call it Mid-Continent's cost study at this juncture?
This is Karen Kramer from staff, and if I understand your question, has staff adequately or believe they've adequately looked at the cost study? Is that the question?
Well, that would be one question. The other is it sufficient to make a to base the decision upon?
I guess I would submit if your decision is to reject the cost study, then yes. If your decision is to accept this as a cost study, I would say the tip of the iceberg has not even been touched. Again, and maybe staff wasn't as clear with Midcontinent as it should have been, and when they talked to us about this cost study, and really it was, I think, staff just trying not to be rude, but we told them numerous times that we would not support this cost study. But if they wanted to proceed forward, they can. There is no filter system in what you file in front of a commission. If they wanted to open a docket or file a petition and file whatever they want in that, they can. And so we were always very clear with them that we couldn't keep them from filing this cost study, but we would not support it in any manner. And the reason for that being is it did not follow our rules or comply in any manner. Keith and Harlan gave it a very hardly at all look at, but just to point out the most obvious flaws, and the reason for that is there's no way staff had the time to look at a cost study that had nothing to do with what we do. They wouldn't be able to run the model on it. I mean, there's just no time. There's barely time to do the work we have to do anyway, let alone to look at, say, a draft cost study. And so staff never looked at it, and maybe we weren't clear enough with Midcontinent in explaining that to them that you can file it, but we are just not ever going to support it, nor did we really look at it.
Given the length of the response, Commissioner, would you be amenable to having Midcontinent respond as well?
I was going to ask Mr. Gerdes if he wanted to make a comment on it. Yes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. I do have to take issue with what Ms. Kramer has said. The reason that staff can say that the cost study doesn't have anything to do with, quote, what we do, unquote, is because Midcontinent has follows GAAP accounting and does not follow what I'll call the FCC accounting, U.S. AOC. But that doesn't mean, as Dr. Ancombe testified, that the two can't be reconciled by appropriate adjustments. Because as Dr. Ancombe said in his testimony, we're only dealing with numbers. And the question is putting the numbers in the correct category. And that was the process that they went through in manufacturing this cost study. The effort was made to construct a cost study that could take GAAP accounting and put it through the same test as the FCC accounting would do to come up with essentially the same result. You can't, but for instance, you have a rule that says use our software, use our software to come up with the result. Well, it's impossible to use your software because we use GAAP accounting. Now, that doesn't mean it's wrong. It means it's a different system of accounting. And so Midcontinent spent thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars on this cost study, and they were encouraged to do so by staff. I sat in a couple of meetings myself. It was only at a late date that we were told that this cost study would not be acceptable and were never given what we thought were good reasons why. I don't want to cast aspersions on staff unfairly. Staff's very busy. But nonetheless, staff somewhere along the line slammed the door in our faces. That's what I'd say. It may be because they were too busy. That certainly would be based on my experience. As you know, I spend a lot of time dealing with dockets before this commission. It may very well be that staff was too busy. I can understand that, but I can't understand the out-of-hand rejection of this cost study. Now, I don't want to extend this, Mr. Chairman, beyond what the commission thinks is reasonable. I did ask to have Dr. Ann come on the stand, or excuse me, on the phone, along with Tom Simmons and Mary Lonas, because I was told there may be questions. I obviously did not do the work. I don't have the technical expertise. I just ask the questions and other people answer them. So if you do want to delve further into this, I can ask Dr. Ancom, who adopted the testimony related to our cost study, to go further. But I don't want to go outside the parameters that were given here. So with that.
And Mr. Gerdes, I can't speak for my colleagues, but I would have some level of discomfort. You know, the record is set. It is what it is. And I think hearing from attorneys at this time to clarify your legal arguments is appropriate. But I don't know that we necessarily want to hear from issuary experts.
And just to conclude, Mr. Chairman, we believe that we have a solid record. We believe that the cost study that's in the record does what it's been advertised to do, and that it does take the inputs and utilize them properly. Beyond that, you know, we got into this argument during the testimony about when the staff had only had this short period of time to deal with. That just wasn't true. I mean, we've been talking about this for well over a year. I'm sorry that staff didn't have the time to look at it, but in the same sense of the word, and we said this in our brief too, you take three different CLECs and staff treated them each differently. There is no consistency. And so we feel we've been a victim of that as well. So I'll be quiet. If you have other questions, I'll be happy to try to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Gerdes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have some other, I'll call them consternations at this point, but I'll relinquish the mic to fellow commissioners for a moment.
I have a few questions, unless you want to hop in, Commissioner Kolbeck.
Well, I've just got just to piggyback on Commissioner Hansen's questions, there seems to be a huge disconnect between what staff feels has taken place and maybe what Mid-Continent feels has taken place. Just so I have my facts straight, the cost study was never intended to be the final say. Is that the truth, Ms. Kramer?
That would be staff's understanding. It was always our understanding. They were just kind of presenting it as, look, we should get at least the 11.5 cents, and this cost study shows a floor.
Okay. So Mr. Gerdes, could you comment just briefly on that?
My understanding of the intent was that the cost study was in the final analysis to replicate a result comparable to the result that the commission's rules require. That, in other words, it would turn out the same answer.
Well, I guess one thing that I struggle with in my mind is that it sounds like someone made a reservation for 10 guests and showed up with 100 and is kind of blaming staff that 100 didn't get served. So I want to know what changed at the end, I guess. Was there a certain amount of disconnect there with staff, or how can we explain that?
Well, Commissioner Kolbeck, I think we were, I have to take issue with what you're saying in the sense that the Mid-Continent, I believe, thinks they've bent over backwards to try and cooperate with staff in coming up with an accurate switched access rate. And I think we adequately discussed it in the briefs. I don't know what else to say. Mid-Continent does not feel like they mistreated staff. And I'm sorry, but that's...
No, that's fine. That's fine. That's what I had on that issue.
Ms. Kramer, on page 8 of staff's brief, you outline how commission's rules were clearly intended to be used by incumbent LECs rather than competitive LECs. And I think attempt to make an argument that so the rules shouldn't apply to CLECs. I mean, if that's the case, are the rules just silent on CLECs? And what guidance should the commission draw from the rules?
I believe that the rules are silent to CLECs simply because they weren't contemplated when these rules were put in place. And, you know, there's discussion as to timeline on that. As to what guidance, I think your best bet is your FCC guidelines and what they have done with CLECs, because they have looked at CLECs and how the markets work and if they're working. And you know, they did have quite an extensive docket on that. And, again, I know that's interstate. But, again, it's a good guideline for somebody who has looked at the issue. And, again, a number of other states that have looked at this, and certainly the trend in the industry is not to raise the CLEC intrastate rate, but clearly the rate is going down. And so I'm not sure if I answered your question as to what guidance can you take from the rules, but I would say very little, unless you want to give it an absolute black and white reading, which is it applies if you're a LEC. Whether there's an I in front of it or a C in front of it, the rules apply to you.
What process did the FCC use to lay out that framework? I mean, was that a fact-specific adjudication or was that a rulemaking? And if you don't have the answer to that, that's fine. I mean, I'll just tell you my concern.
I don't think it was a rulemaking. It seems to me it was just a docket. I'm not sure.
I've got the document sitting in front of me, and again, their procedures are somewhat different than ours are, in that sometimes they have things that to us look kind of like adjudications, but they end up in a rulemaking. This particular proceeding, and I have it right here, so you can look at it, and it's an order we've judicially noticed.
And it's titled 7th Report and Order and Further Notice of Proposed Rulemaking.
Right, and I mean, to me, and it's a very generic title, if you notice. It's in the matter of access reform. And to me, it looks like a garden variety FCC rulemaking to me. But.
And I think that just contributes to my concern. I mean, I kind of think at first blush, Ms. Kramer, that what the SEC did makes a lot of sense. And I understand why staff indicates that the commission should follow the FCC lead regarding CLEC access rates. I'm just not entirely sure I find a legal basis for us to do that through this proceeding. I mean, did staff have any concerns about this being an ad hoc rulemaking? We don't have all of the parties. I mean, we don't have every CLEC that might be affected by a relatively major commission realignment of direction if we were to make this an ad hoc rulemaking. Thoughts?
Well, do you mean in terms of if your decision...
Well, you know, let me rephrase. I mean, I think staff is, and of course staff did, I think did commission a service by outlining a number of possible alternatives. But in the staff brief, the staff seems to suggest that the commission should find that it's not in the public interest to treat CLEX as the rules indicate that LEX in general should be treated. If the commission were to find that, isn't that more appropriate to do in a rulemaking?
Well, I think you could find that in this matter and set a rate for Mid-Continent, you know, either at the Quest rate or, you know, staff would recommend, you know, continuing to grant them the exemption and that the rate would be the Quest rate. And then you could open a rulemaking docket to involve all the parties and make it specifically a CLEC rulemaking. Again, when you have open dockets in front of you, there isn't an appearance of impropriety. You know, it's harder for the commission to make policy when you've got open dockets on those very issues. I believe you could just do a paper filing, more like what the FCC does than what we have normally done in the past with rules, which is more of a face-to-face and meeting with all the concerned persons with the rules.
Okay, thank you very much. Other questions from commissioners or advisors? Yes, Mr. Islov.
I don't know if I have any questions, but if the commissioners wouldn't mind, I think I have a few observations I would hope might be helpful. You know, having been a staff member for many, many years, for about 20 years, I've looked at this docket with some interest because no question it's been difficult. I can certainly understand where staff is coming from, and I can certainly see where Midco has come from. There's a couple things I have in mind. It was mentioned by Mr. Gertis that numbers are numbers, and that's true. I think ultimately it can be true. Sometimes, though, it can cost a lot of money and take a lot of time to get those numbers to mean the same thing as the other numbers. And I think that's what staff is running into. There's a problem. Because we have, and I think in the testimony it mentioned, there are 29 or 30 CLECs. And I can see staff's point of view. If they're in a position where they have to adopt a different cost study for each, it could be very expensive, very time-consuming. And frankly, I don't know if we have enough people to actually ever do that. I don't know if many state commissions would. It struck me, though, as we've gone through this from the beginning about a year ago, that at some point, I truly believe there was a disconnect, and that staff and Midco, I think there's been some major misunderstandings. And I think in part that's due, I don't think it's bad faith on either party. Midco is not, you know, the routine customer we see come in every day. They follow GAAP accounting. They're a big company. You know, I don't think anybody doubts they've done a lot of good things for the state. I certainly feel that way. But, you know, Mr. Simmons, I think, is very honorable. I've always enjoyed working with him, but when you step into the regulated world, as so many of these small telephone companies can tell you, things can be very technical, and it's hard to get a handle on that. And I think he probably hired some very smart people to work in that cost study. And I'm not saying they aren't skilled in the industry, but it's very difficult to meld these two worlds. And there really wasn't a whole lot of time, even though I think there was maybe 5 months between the time they filed the case and the hearing. It just isn't a lot of time. And so I think there was a good faith effort. I think, you know, with Midco spending that amount of money on a cost study, I think they intended to come up with a cost study that was usable, and they did it in a good faith manner. And I can see, though, where staff set its feet, because if people don't follow the model, it's very difficult for them to process the case without bringing their own consultants and spending a lot of time. And it seems to me, as I listen to this, and because I don't think there's been bad faith in either part, and I think ultimately they're trying to reach a fair resolution, it seems to me that at some point, I don't think you can just shut out a company because it has GAAP accounting and say, well, you just can't come in here with a cost study because it won't work. On the other hand, I don't think it's fair to say that GAAP accounting shouldn't be put under a fairly, I don't want to say a high-powered microscope, but at least a decent-sized microscope, so when the work is done, there's some confidence on staff's part that those numbers bear some relationship to what our other CLECs, you know, are showing up with, and the other small companies out there who make up the LECA group. I would think you know, if some way we could get these parties channeled on the same path, and I know staff is very busy, and I'm sure Mid-Continent is very busy too, just to keep my phone and my internet and my TV running, I want them to be busy. But I think if they could have a period of, you know, a few months to work on this, I think there's some way they could maybe reach a resolution that would work for both parties. Because I do think it's been an honest effort on both parties to get there. But I don't think there's anything, from my point of view, as I look at the record, I don't know what you three commissioners would do other than reach what I would call a very unsatisfying result based on the current record. And that's just my feeling, that maybe perhaps they could get together and give them a couple months to develop something that, you know, in a cooperative manner that would work. Not that it wouldn't turn our, you know, adversarial at the end, but at least give it a chance to try to make this work. And perhaps somewhere down the road this will come in handy for other purposes. I don't know. That's a thought. That's some thoughts. I don't know. It was a fairly long speech. I'm sorry about that.
No apology necessary, Mr. Rislov. Commissioner Hansen?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate Mr. Rislov's comments. I'm swimming in a sea of somewhat contradictory information here and attempting to consider that everybody is trying to do the right thing here. But yet, if we're to arrive at a conclusion, a definitive conclusion here, and base our position upon a study, and having staff saying that they are concerned that with the accuracy of the study, I don't know how we can rely upon that. It's a challenge. Just a few questions that may, just out of curiosity more than anything else. I don't recall when the study was filed.
The actual completed study, I believe, was given to staff in February, if I recall correctly, from reading the briefs.
And when did you request that the cost study be used was it at that time when it was filed in February that it was intended and that you asked staff to base their decision on that cost study?
Well, I think, again, I'd have to go back through the record, Commissioner Hansen, to be absolutely accurate, but my recollection is that at that time in February, we had the docket was open and we were in the process of developing the docket. Staff asked for and was given, I think, the actual data requests were like in December, and we got them answered like February 8th, I think that's what it was. And at that time, it was Mid-Continent's intention that if we couldn't work something out, that we were going to rely on the cost study. The rules say you have to have a cost study. Well, we had a cost study. Certainly, we're talking about rules that were adopted for the passage of the Telecommunications Act. But the fact remains, this commission has used those rules as if they applied up until recent date. This proceeding may change that. But certainly there was an effort and an intention on the part of Mid-Continent to try and settle it, just like most of these things are settled. But there became a time when we couldn't settle it. Mid-Continent was being given no alternative but to go to the Quest rate, and Mid-Continent looked around and saw others that were not going to the Quest rate. There are at least three CLECs, as I mentioned in my brief, that are not at the Quest rate now. They will get there based on those step downs, but they're not there now. But staff wanted Mid-Continent to go to the Quest rate now. So, I mean, there was a period of time when Mid-Continent and Quest pretty much, I think, each decided to go their own way. we were talking. We were trying to get it settled. I give staff credit for that. But there became a time when both sides' positions pretty much became cast in stone, I think.
Okay. If I may, Mr. Chair. Mr. Gerdes, do you think that there's an inherent unfairness in using a switched access rate other than that which is used by the ILEC?
Certainly, based upon the rules as they exist now, there is no inherent unfairness because it's based on costs, whatever they are. And costs for different companies can be different.
Is there?
The question is, I guess, where is the FCC going to go with this? And we don't have a crystal ball. We don't know. But certainly, Mid-Continent, or for that matter, any small CLEC, is different than Qwest, which is a huge company. I use the example of, but all CLECs, in we believe, legally, are treated the same. And I use the example of AT&T has a CLEC. Well, AT&T is a huge company. Yet, as far as the CLEC is concerned, it's a CLEC. And it's just like Mid-Continent, and it's just like Northern Valley. They're all CLECs and should be treated the same. So what can you do but base it on their costs?
Is there a business advantage? Is there a competitive advantage for a CLEC to, well, I think the question will obfuscate the answer because it'll be so obvious, but isn't there a competitive advantage for a CLEC in that situation where the switch access rate is different and they can price their, well, they can cherry pick, for instance?
Not if you believe in the competitive model that Dr. Ancombe was talking about in his testimony.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other questions from commissioners or advisors? Any comments? Any action? Commissioner Kolbach.
Well, I just have I don't know. This whole thing really bothers me. It's tough to come to a decision, and I think economically I feel that this case is like someone owning a taxi cab for a dollar and then someone else gets to charge $2 and then get to use their taxi cab to make the money. And so economically it doesn't make sense to me, but legally is kind of where I'm struggling right now. Are you interested in taking a couple of months to work this out? Is Mid-Continent with staff to get this resolved with the cost study to dig into this and give our staff time to actually do a thorough analysis of it?
Commissioner Kolbach, I have no authority for my client to agree to anything at this time. If the commission would like to give us a week and see if I can – if we can come up with some basis. I mean, to be fair to staff and to be fair to Mid-Continent, this has been going on for a long time. And if we can't come to some kind of agreement very quickly, it seems to me that the commission might as well just make its decision. Mid-Continent can always appeal. That's certainly an option. So staff can appeal depending on what the commission decides. Those are options.
Staff can never appeal a commission decision.
Excuse me. Okay. You're right. I apologize. But I certainly would be willing to check with my client and see if they would be willing to do so, but I think that we would want this back on the next commission's agenda so that if we can't agree with staff, that we would have a decision so we can then decide which direction we're going to go.
How long does staff think that if – I realize that the clock started and stopped, and as soon as we went to hearing, it basically stopped. So the time from the hearing until now, no time was spent on the cost study.
Correct.
And it's staff's opinion that the realm of the cost study was not going to be to the extent that it turned out to be, so that time got short on that end of it. How much time does staff feel they would need to actually dig into the cost study that was provided by Mid-Continent?
Well, I believe at the hearing, and I can't remember if it was Mr. Rizlov or Mr. Sanger, but they had mentioned something like 4 to 8 months minimum, probably. The biggest problem that I see is, not to diss Terry or John, but we don't have anybody on staff who has ever looked at a cost study, let alone tried to take one that's gap accounting and transfer that to a uniform system of accounts. I don't know of anybody who's done that other than their expert, and I think his was a shot in the dark. I don't think there's any model out there to do that. I don't know. So what I'm saying is nobody on staff would be able to conduct that cost study analysis. We would have to hire a consultant. At this point, the way this docket is opened or entitled or whatever you want to call it, we have no ability to put that cost back to Mid-Continent. That would have to be a cost that the commission would bear to hire a consultant and do that kind of work.
Okay, thank you.
For a number of months, I believe.
I'll yield the floor to anyone else.
Well,
other.
I have a question on that last point. I mean, if this has been filed as a cost study, I mean, at that point, it doesn't matter what the dang title of the case is called. You know, to me, if it's been filed as a cost study, that ought to trigger the assessment provisions. It doesn't matter what the name.
No, I have no idea. That's not what I do. I don't know. I'm just telling you that there will be a consultant that needs to be hired, however you do that. Whether, you know, it's not something that's going to be able to be done internally.
My comments were understood, we would like this short period of time to talk to staff and see if we can come up with some basis upon which we can work. And if the answer is yes, then we can come back and present it to the commission. If it's no, then we would want the commission to announce its decision. That's what I was talking about. I wasn't saying that they have to get their study done and, you know, by
well,
the next meeting.
And I guess I understand that, but I was, if the decision is yes, would you be, we've just heard that it's going to cost a lot more money in maybe 4 to 8 months. I mean, and that's something that you would have to talk to your people about. But I can almost guarantee that the 4 to 8 months would be less painless than the decision that I'd like to make. But I don't know if that's appropriate at this time or not. Any other? I guess I'll yield the floor again.
Mr. Chair, I'm very interested in the discussion that's taking place here, especially between the parties. I want to be fair to the parties. I want to make certain that we're fair to business. At the same time, my main concern is being fair to the consumers. And in this particular situation, I don't know how I could possibly rule in favor of Midco, unless I had a cost study that staff and that I, at least that I was comfortable with. As Mr. Rizlov said, I don't fault the Midco by any means from a standpoint of their attempt at that cost study. It's just that if there is some consternation surrounding that study at this juncture, I just don't see how I can vote in favor of Midco.
Well, you know, one thought I might have is that it doesn't appear to be a great cost study, and I don't think it's been fully vetted, and I don't think it's been fully evaluated, but it's what we've got in the record. And, you know, depending on who you believe, it either showed up in February or it showed up in July, or what version you believe was a significant cost study was filed. But even if you look at July, you know, I don't know, was that 5 months ago? And I understand that staff didn't feel they had any reason to be actively testing the information in that cost study. Part of me still thinks that this has gone on quite a little while and that we probably should come up with at least some interim ruling to move on, I mean, to move this forward. I don't know that, you know, my brainstorm will have a lot of support. It sounds like maybe it wouldn't, but just for conversation's sake, I'd throw out sort of a four-prong approach that I was considering. First would be to deny Mid-Continent's exemption from developing cost-based, deny their exemption from developing company-based cost rates. Secondly, that we would put into effect interim rates at the level requested by Mid-Continent, subject to refund. Now, the good thing about the refund is if they're wrong, then, you know, no harm's been done. I think we maintain the fairness that you're getting at, Commissioner. If they guess wrong, they don't get to keep it. I think that would require at least two waivers of our rules, specifically 2010-2704, which requires the U.S. AOC accounting, in 2010-2710, which requires use of the Commission software program. Prong three would be that we begin a more robust cost study process to fully test and evaluate the filed cost study, and that would come with a filing fee. I do believe that staff would have to hire a consultant. I don't have any reason to dispute that, and I do think that that those costs would be properly borne by Mid-Continent in this situation. And then fourth, that I mean, we've been treading water on the rulemaking 05-02, at least in part because we've had a number of these dockets open. And I think I understand the desire to avoid appearance of conflict or impropriety, but we clearly need to move forward on that. And so I would direct staff, I would rather have the commission redirect RM 05-002 to focus only on CLEC rules, and furthermore direct staff to file a straw man proposal for what those rules should look like for our discussion and within 180 days or some number of days. I think all of this is legally doable, but I would certainly be willing to hear from advisors or commissioners or even parties if they think something I've suggested is clear, if there's no legal basis to do any of the things I've suggested.
The first would be to deny.
If you don't have a cost study, our rules say that you get the LECA plus rate.
That's right.
Staff has argued that we should, at least in one instance, that we should deny the cost study and give them the ILEC rate or the Quest rate. I'm just saying, you know, hey, the cost study isn't great, but it's what we've got in the record. So we would deny Mid-Continent's request with their initial filing to grant them an exemption from developing those company-based rates.
So the second was to waive the rules. The third was to study and evaluate the cost study.
Yeah, two was sort of amalgamation. First, we would put into effect interim rates at I think it's 9.85 level. I think it's actually 9.86 when you're round, but whatever the requested rate is, subject to refund. And I do think that's important because, to Commissioner Hansen's point, I don't know that we have a whole lot of faith that those numbers are accurate in any real way. This is what I throw out. You know, from the line of questioning, I don't know that I necessarily have a lot of support to do this. So if we need to tweak it to reach some compromise to move forward, I mean, I'm all ears. And maybe we just need to scrap it and move a different way. I don't know. But that I throw that out for discussion's sake.
No, and I just wanted to clarify that we would deny the LECA plus rate. And then bring in what they feel is a valid cost, which was 9. We won't say that.
I think it was 9.8557.
I think that.
Oh.
I don't think it is.
Right. Once they file it, I mean, that's what they're asking for. They're going to have to know. But so I, you know, just.
Well, clearly my mistake. My apologies, Mid-Continent. I am an error. And we want to make sure the transcript adequately reflects that confidential information.
Well, and I mentioned it, too. That's how we got into the discussion.
not
the number. The number that was used is confidential.
I understand that it's confidential, and but it's been said, so we can't unring the bell.
Well, perhaps the web is not working right now.
Which I don't think that's the number. And then to move on, we would evaluate the cost study at our level. Okay. And then to open the rulemaking docket. Okay.
Just as a note, we'll certainly try to see if there's a technical fix prior to posting this as an archived audio file on the web. We'll see if there's some technical fix. Hopefully there aren't millions listening on the web, but there are certainly some.
I would note that originally it was not filed as confidential, and I believe, in fact, in Mid-Continent's testimony and a couple of places in the transcript, they do throw out that number. It's really just later in Mr. Gertis's briefs that it becomes clear that they wanted it confidential and that. So the number's been out there anyway. It could be found if anybody wanted to look.
So I'm only 30% of a jerk.
Well, I'm going to raise another issue, too. I mean, and because and these mics just work different than the old ones we had, I can tell you that. This thing evolved, and it evolved through an odd bit of procedure that we went through a while ago. If you recall, the initial petition filed by Midco did not file a rate. It requested an exemption and the use of the alternative rate-setting mechanism in Rule 12 of Chapter 27. And that's the use of the, quote, Lekapus rate. What happened to transform this, really, structurally, was when I set around the issue statement for approval and review and approval by the attorneys for the parties, and I got responses back, and those included, at that point in time, an alternative of the use of this study. You know, and technically, I'm not sure at this point, I guess, at the point when that rate, if it's meant to be intended as a filed rate, a tariffed rate, I mean, those are public filings. If that's the intent, it's gotta be a public tariff filing that we publish on the internet for everybody to look at. You know?
Thanks for the clarification. There's still no motion on the floor. I didn't make it so we could discuss, more liberally. Any other comments? Or we can even backtrack to additional questions. Yes, Ms. Kramer.
I would just want to clarify, when you talked about the interim rates are subject to a refund, that would be with interest, isn't that correct?
I hadn't given it a whole lot of thought. Is that routine commission procedure?
I believe that's in the statute itself. I can check.
Well, don't want to break statute, so that would be if we ever get around to making a formal motion, then yes, it would be with interest. It would be with interest.
Yeah. For whatever it's worth, I would recommend to my client, at least, that this would be a good interim step if the commission were to enter an order.
I just have, I'm okay with the first part of it, the cost study evaluation and the rulemaking. I just want to know, what is the Pandora's box if we waive our rules? Does staff or advisors see any? If we waive the rules for this client, are we opening issues in the future?
You can hear from staff maybe if they have something.
I would suggest that Orbitcom has already filed, and we have that open docket. And I suspect or fear that every other CLEC out there will throw together their gap accounting and, kind of throw together a little conversion and file it. And so this is just, as you say, a Pandora's box, or the floodgates will open. But maybe that's what we need to do. I don't know. Maybe the rulemaking will take your rulemaking is going to be harder once these, if they start filing switch to access cost studies.
I would acknowledge, you know, Commissioner Kolbeck, this could have a whole variety of unintended consequences, not necessarily because of the two rules that I suggested waiving, but just in that we're allowing a cost study that, I mean, this wouldn't be a typical move for us. I mean, I don't suggest this without some grave reservations. It may not even be the best thing to do.
I might make one observation on that too, on just the cost study. Again, you may have Orbitcom, you know, they're not a little player, I guess. But the cost study in this case has sometimes been referenced like it's nothing. I mean, it's most of what's in this, but it's a significant piece of work. It's not something that anybody out there is going to be able to throw together for $1,000. I mean, it's a significant piece of effort that was done here. Whether it completely complies or is an analog, a correct analog for the U.S. OA type accounts, I can't say that. But on the other hand, it's 170 pages of very, very detailed detailed conversions, translations, and computations.
Just as a minor counterpoint to that, though, I mean, I don't want to minimize the potential consequences. I mean, the difference between the quest rate and what a cost study may show could be many cents. I mean, it could be a dozen or two dozen cents. We just don't know. That might well make it financially interesting for more than just a small number of CLECs to file such a docket.
I've heard rumors to that effect. That it could be, there could be a very wide divergence. You're right.
And I know I'm undercutting my own, you know, potential motion a little bit, but I don't want us to do something without realizing that it is. I mean, I don't know if it's Pandora's box, but it's somebody's.
Well, and I guess if 23 out of 29 CLECs are already at agreement, if we start to waive a rule, that's just everything that's been worked for over the last few years to actually just kind of go backwards.
Well, and just as a clarification, the only two rules I've suggested waiving would be 04 dealing with the GAAP accounting and 10 dealing with the software program.
That's true. That's true.
I think the bigger issue is this cost study kind of came about not in a traditional way, although, you're right, Commissioner Kolbeck. I mean, waiving 04, I mean, allowing GAAP accounting in this instance, I mean, it is a big deal.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, may I ask a question of Mr. Gertis, and possibly Mr. Gertis may have to ask it of his client. Could you give us an idea how challenging it would be for you to either convert your cost study or convert your accounting so that you could provide a cost study that is within the rules of the commission?
It would be a difficult undertaking. I know that because of the anecdotal conversations I've had with the client. It would be like asking any large business to completely change the way they account for their business, and so I would say yes, it would be a big deal and an expensive thing for them to have to do, because it's not just Mid-Continent; it's every business for profit in the United States just about uses GAAP accounting, except for utilities, which use utility accounting, which is different than the type of accounting that telecommunications companies use. So it's by industry as much as anything else. So I'd say it would be very difficult, yes.
Mr. Chair, if I may. Ms. Kramer, how you gave us somewhat of an idea. Can you give us a little bit of perspective of what the challenge would be for us in hiring an individual or individuals to pursue the matching that would be necessary if Mid-Continent did not change their accounting process over so that we could examine it?
You know, I don't even know anybody out there that does this, and not that I would, but so I would suspect it's going, I'm sure there's a number of consultants, however, who would be willing to do this for us. I mean, but again, it becomes a matter of, do they really know what they're doing, or is it, again, is it just something that everyone's just going to try to wing? I don't know. If you could give me 1 minute.
Well, while you're taking that minute, Mr. Chair, I heard the number 4 months and 8 months thrown out during the process, and that's one of the reasons why I was pursuing this, trying to get an idea of 4 months, or if we pursue that avenue, if 4 months or 8 months from now we get down the road and we find out that either A, it cannot be done, or B, it's going to take a lot longer period of time, and that's what I'm trying to get some feel for at this juncture.
And I just might have one comment while they're discussing over there, but even if we did waiver the gap accounting, we still would be taking the petitioner's word. I mean, our staff has still not had time to evaluate the gap accounting, and they've still not, or the numbers. So if we did make the waiver, I would think we'd want to make the waiver and then still have our staff assess their work, I should say.
Yeah, I will acknowledge that is one of many oddities in sort of the course of action I laid out. You know, maybe a more conventional one would have maintained the current rate until such time as, you know, a cost study was fully vetted. You know, I went a little bit different route because I do have some sympathy for the fact that this process has been ongoing for quite some time, and I don't in any way mean to allocate blame because I don't think it's necessary to do that, but I do think we've had these numbers in this process out for quite some time. I also think making an interim rate, putting it into effect subject to refund, minimizes some of the concern. And I would also tell you that if you look through our statutes, at some point, I think all proposed rates go into effect subject to refund. You know, it may be 180 days, but at some point if the commission doesn't decide something, the rate just goes into effect.
Sure.
And so that's why I suggested what I did.
Mr. Chair, I believe not. I thought Ms. Kramer might have something for us.
But back to your comment that you had said to leave the rate to exactly where it is today, I'm comfortable with that. And then the cost study evaluation and the rulemaking, I'm also comfortable with that. So if we could maybe get through how to make this cost study that they've spent thousands of dollars on go to good use. We wouldn't actually close this docket, though. I guess that's where I'm a little confused on that. But, well, I'll let you answer the question. Commissioner Hansen's question first.
Well, in discussing it with John and Heather and Keith, they know of no one off the top of their heads that could do it. The belief is it would have to be someone from out of state. We wouldn't be able to hire a Vantage or a Martin Group or anything like that. You'd have all sorts of conflicts. So I would suspect it's going to probably take, I don't know, what does it take, 6-8 weeks to get something out there? You know, again, the timing this time of year to let companies know that this is what we're looking for and this is what we're doing, and then get proposals back from them. I mean, that alone, you're building in a gap of time, and then get everything to them. And I think you're looking at a good 6 to 8 months out, and then I suspect there will be yet a hearing. I don't think they're going to come up with a number that everyone's going to thumbs up here, but I don't know.
You know, maybe in the interest of moving forward, I would move the the motion that I suggested, again with the suggested change that the interim rates be subject to refund with interest. Is there any discussion on the motion or any amendments to the motion?
Mr. Chair, I just have a question for any of the staff if they see a challenge and they want to be certain that we're, as I said, fair to the companies. And I think that your motion is proper in all of the areas. I see the only concern that I have is potential for giving an unfair advantage to one company over another and provide for some potential cherry picking. Just if there's anyone in staff that sees anything in that concern at this juncture.
I'm not following your question.
Well, then you can't answer. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You know, I think your question's got a lot of merit, Commissioner. I mean, I do think treating two telecommunications companies providing the same services in the same town very differently has real problems. You know, letting one company get X and one company get X plus 50%, you know, that doesn't normally happen in a market. Unfortunately, we have an asymmetry of rates no matter what we do.
If your question was, and apparently Commissioner Johnson got it, Chairman Johnson got it, but I didn't, but yes, I think that there will be some issues that come up with this. Again, and not to, this is a competitive LEC, and you know, they did choose the markets they went into, for what I assume would be business purposes and due diligence and all that on their part. And so I do believe we will see a number of companies calling us and raising questions about what they can do next.
Yeah, my question is with from a standpoint of competition and predatory pricing and the ability to for one company to select consumers over another company's, those that are easier to serve and make it more difficult for another company to exist. I know competition is competition, but it's being regulated, and if we regulate the price, everyone should have the same opportunity and the same pricing scheme. That's where I'm
Mr. Chairman, if I may just jump in here just to perhaps augment what Ms. Kramer has said, Mid-Continent has said that it would make its cost study methodology available to all at the conclusion of this proceeding. I mean, it's not like it's something secret. We've made that offer to staff when we were trying to settle the case, and I think I reiterated that in one of my briefs. So, I mean, that would be available for people to look at and see if they agree with it or not.
So that they could then raise their prices as well.
Well, or make whatever use of it they wish.
Yes.
I might. May I make one observation? And
certainly. Question? And then I see Mr. Chair.
I just note, and just the record, this is clearly reflected in the record that was made here, too, is that I would just note that if the rate were approved, if you were to vote for that, I mean, they're not the only company that has. We would still have, we've still got Northern Valley sitting up there with a significantly higher switched access rate than this. So it isn't like the only company out there that doesn't mirror Quest rates.
I don't mean to imply that I'm happy with one broken egg and want to break more. Mr. Chair.
You know, Mr. Smith, your point's well taken. My biggest concern with what's before us, I mean, I'm the one who made the motion, but I still have pretty big concerns with it. This seems to reverse the trends and the efforts that this commission has worked so hard over a number of years to try to bring access to some at least perceived reasonableness. At least, I mean, a lot of people in the country are looking at South Dakota saying the rates that we're charging are unreasonable, and some of that is fodder for the discussion in D.C. So this is movement away from our stated goal, but I don't know how else to go about it.
Well, and I think that you're right, but perhaps, and I think your motion completely encompasses that in the form of a the forum in which perhaps that has to be done, and that's a rulemaking where we take a look at this, and we approach this in the way that our law provides for making decisions of general applicability and, in effect, changing the rules of the game so that everybody's treated the same. But we do that, you know, our law provides that those kind of decisions are made in a rulemaking proceeding. And I would point out, too, and it's worth at least noting, yes, the staff has made a very good effort, I think a very exemplary and courageous struggle here to bring rates into what it believes is the right philosophy. But I would also note that those rates have been done via agreement. Those have been done via stipulation. Those are the other parties to those. And a lot of those companies, for them, I mean, honestly, I'm just going to be blunt about it, access revenues aren't a huge part of their revenue stream. For some of them it is. And mainly the ones we see where it's a very significant part of their revenue, they're the ones we see here in proceedings like this. But just noting that, all of those others were established through agreement between staff. And I think one of the main reasons for that is in a lot of cases, going to the expense of even the level of, the significant level of cost associated with this study, they probably just didn't feel it was worth it.
Mr. Islam.
There was a famous quote, I think it was made by someone in the Bush administration that, you go with the army you have and not the one you want. When war breaks out, in this case, I was going to go back to the study points that you raised, and it could take 4 or 8 months. Well, as gifted intellectually as Mr. Singer is, he and I both are making a little bit of a guess here, I think it could be said. It should be pointed out, and this is the technical point I wanted to make, the burden will still be upon Mid-Continent through this whole proceeding. Anyone staff hires will be, I think the term has been used, vetting those numbers, but Mid-Continent's people are going to have to be ready to step up and make any changes if they're agreed upon within that study process. And as Ms. Kramer said, I expect at the end of this proceeding, and it may last 3 months or 2 months or I don't know how long, it may last 6 months or longer, I suspect there will be a few minor points of disagreement that will come before the commission. And going back to that point that it's either a study or, whatever rate, and notwithstanding all the work staff's done to move toward it, if the choice is to look at a study, I think a study probably is a good idea. I'm not going to guess what's going to happen in Orbicom, but understand that there will need to be a consultant hired. But that consultant will be playing more of the staff role. There will be plenty of work to do if staff hires that consultant, no question about it. But the company will still bear the burden of proof, and that company's consultant will have to be ready, willing and able to step up to the plate when staff's consultant asks them to. And again, I'm making a lot of assumptions, but that was a technical point. Who bears the burden of proof at this point? And that would remain with Mid-Continent. I have other observations too, but everybody's starting to go to sleep.
I just want to go back to the who would be paying for the analyst? Would that be billable? Is that for sure? Because it is Mid-Continent's burden, correct?
Yes, the statute provides, it just states that Public Utilities Commission may require a telecommunications company to make a deposit when it files for approval of a general change in rates or prices for any service. And at this point in time, I think what you're saying is that with this moment, we're accepting the fact that they are making that request, and I think so. I don't know if Mr. Gerdes has a contrary view, but to me, that's what it is.
I just wanted to make sure that we weren't spending our money that we don't necessarily have. I want to make sure it was good.
The statute provides for a filing fee of up to $100,000.
Okay. Well, and by way of clarification, my motion did note specifically that there would be a filing fee. Now, certainly, if Midcontinent or any other party, they could always make a motion to reconsider if they felt like our order was somehow not in compliance with the law.
Well, and let me just throw this out. I'll concede on the waiver of the rules, the gap accounting, and the model. If we just deny the LECA plus rate, don't implement the new rate, and then we go ahead with the cost study and evaluate that, and then our rulemaking, as you discussed.
So you would need to have the Quest rate as the interim rate.
Well, that's what existing is, correct?
Their existing rate is the Quest rate. I think if I might clarify, Commissioner Johnson's motion would not have resulted in the LECA plus rate. The LECA plus rate is 12.25 cents. What his motion would have done is, on an interim basis and subject to a condition, you know, that they have the right of refund, it would accept the rate that would be demonstrated by the cost study that Midco requested in their amended petition be considered as an alternative to the...
And I understand
okay.
that.
Okay.
Yeah, Commissioner, you're right. There are three different rates.
Yeah.
You know, if you want the current rate to be the rate in the interim,
yeah.
That's not what this motion would do.
It would not. Okay.
It would not.
So how can we get that? Status quo, and basically what I'm looking for is status quo, get the gap accounting included until we can make a good decision and come up with one rate adjustment.
Well, from a practical... I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, that's okay.
From a practical standpoint, I mean, if I can get two votes to move forward with the motion as it is, I'd like to. I mean, I really think the requested rate is the fair rate in the interim. Now, that being said, I haven't heard anything that leads me to believe that there's a second vote out there yet. Now, there may be, but if there isn't, then maybe we can come back and we can see if there's support for the same motion with the Quest rate as the interim rate. And if that doesn't work, then we'll take another shot at it.
But I guess I'm still a little confused. The Quest rate is the existing rate, correct?
Yeah, but my motion would allow them, not the existing rate, but their requested rate.
Okay.
The requested through the cost study.
Okay, but to deny the first part of your motion, to deny the motion, would leave, that means that they would have no change in their rates that they charge today.
No. Part number one means that they wouldn't get the LECA plus rate, because the only way they can get the LECA plus rate is if we don't allow them to file a cost study. Because we're allowing them to file a cost study, in the interim, we could do one of two things. Either we could say, well, your rate is what your rate is until you've proved your burden. Or we can say, we're going to give you what you've requested in the interim while we work out the details. I think you can make a plenty strong argument for all three. I'm just sort of shooting. I'm shooting to give Midcontinent the rate they have requested in the interim.
If I could help, I think, in effect, what Commissioner Johnson's motion does would allow Midcontinent to get the rate that ultimately the cost study proved to be, in the alternative, if it was the current rate, the Quest rate, they wouldn't get that rate, what the cost study proved it to be, until at the end of the proceeding. They would get the Quest rate until the end of the proceeding. So it's either allow them their cost study rate now, even though there is no cost study rate and it may take 6 months, or get the Quest rate now and not get the cost study rate until the end of the proceeding. And I think that's accurate, the accurate way to state it.
Other comments or questions? Mr. Smith.
I'm just maybe one other. This is hyper-technical, okay? But I believe... probably going along with your motion, that maybe your motion ought to include that Midco, then they should, before that rate goes into effect, do a formal filing of a tariff, because that's what our our law contemplates. Is that a problem, Mr. Gerdes?
I don't believe so. You're talking about file a tariff that would reflect the result of Midco's cost study.
Yes, a formal rate filing, yes, sir.
I think you're right, yeah.
Well, and then I have a question. Would that then trigger the filing fee and could an intervener come in and ask to suspend that rate then for 180 days? I mean, I'm trying to figure out what this all triggers, or...
My opinion would be that it would trigger the filing fee, that is sort of portion three of the motion, which I know I don't have in writing, and so it's difficult for everybody to follow. And I'll reiterate them here as we get, maybe close to a vote. But that certainly an intervener, I would think, somebody could get intervention status request that we move them back to the rate they're getting today as opposed to the rate that the commission would decide they get in the interim. And that would be another decision opportunity for the commission.
It might be, although I also would like to point out the rate they were requesting was 12.25 cents, and this proceeding's been pending for a year and a half.
Well, yeah, and this would be a late-filed intervention.
I don't know, and that was my question. But we can take that all up if there is.
And the way this docket has progressed, I know that the statutes and the rules do not do a very good job of handling this.
Well, yeah, the only thing I would note on that is, as a matter of record in this case, since at least July 14th, this explicit relief has been included within Mid-Continent's petition.
So your legal analysis would be, listen, it's been, you call it what you want, it's been a cost study docket since that date, and it just the commission hasn't gotten around to assessing a filing fee yet.
That's correct, and we did not assess a filing fee, but we have, and it's been a request for a change in rate since the day it was filed. The statute doesn't, it says any request for a change of rates can trigger a filing fee.
I'm just, notice to the world that certainly did not go out on that. And I suspect you may hear from companies regarding that.
Well, and certainly before the commission takes action, Ms. Kramer, if there are unintended consequences we haven't thought of, or if you think we're not giving due weight to the consequences we expect to happen, let us know.
Those were all the ones we were able to come up with so far.
We'll see what's behind door number three, huh? All right. Further comments or questions on the pending motion? Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to give you some clarity and ease your mind as to whether or not you have two votes or not, but I have to tell you I'm quite conflicted on it. I think you've done an excellent job of taking the challenges that we have before us and putting them within a very reasonable and responsible motion. My confliction comes from a standpoint of if we take item two or three on your motion there, if we take that step, it seems that we have then basically taken the step. I know that there's reimbursement provided for. It's just I hate to open that door or window and then have to close it again later. I struggle with that portion of your motion at this time. I'm just contemplating some of the challenges that it brings up.
Well, perhaps if my colleagues are open to the idea, we can break the four different components into separate votes. It may be that the two votes on one component, the coalition may change as we go along, is what I'm saying. And that way we can...
Well, and Mr. Gerdes at the beginning thought that maybe if you wanted to talk to staff and take this up at our next meeting... Is there any way we can take the motion in under advisement to try to find out some of these unintended consequences and if there's something that we haven't? I know it's gone on a long time, months and months and months, but I'm just really not comfortable with any of the I really don't want to waive the rules. And I just I want to know if this cost study is proper. I want to know how it's going to be paid for, and I want to if we do deny the LECA plus rate and then bring in another rate, are we just taking a stab in the dark? I'm not really comfortable with that either. And I don't want to, you know, my favorite saying about chicken soup, but I just don't know about how to handle this motion.
These legal issues exist. It may be, I think it highly, highly unlikely, but it may be that staff and Midcontinent can reach a settlement, which will avoid the decision on this day. Orbitcom has filed. Maybe Orbitcom and staff can reach a settlement. Again, I don't think that's likely at all, but even if they do, that avoids a decision only on that day. We still have not resolved these issues. I think the only thing that will resolve these issues is component number four, which is rulemaking. I think to a certain extent the rest of the motion creates in all of us the need. We need alacrity, you know, with this rulemaking. I mean, we're all so busy, things don't get done unless there's one or two on the list. You know, number 17 never gets done. And to a certain extent, allowing Midcontinent to receive the requested rate makes us all very, very interested in answering the larger policy questions.
Well, and just to be sure or be clear, I'm all with you, man, on the rulemaking. There's no doubt about that. We need to make a rule that any competitive CLECing is a set rate. I mean, I really feel that that's definitely necessary. The thing that I'm not comfortable with is if the rulemaking can happen fast enough to close the box before Pandora's box has been opened, you know, and how if rulemaking is opened and done quickly and effectively, if we've done this, have we softened our position or have we hurt our position if we do these in an interim? And that's just something I think I might need some time to think about. Because I was pretty dead set on what I was going to do when I got up here, and I really lost my way while we're sitting here. So,
Mr. Chair, I cannot tell you how much I appreciate the integrity of the honesty of my fellow Commissioner Kolbeck and how well you have how willing you have been to mold your motion so that it seems to answer all of those questions. Or, however, there has been some melding as we've gone through the process, and I do think that it would be good for each one of us to have a final written motion in the version of which we're going to finalize. And I know that you have significant pieces to it. However, some of those pieces certainly depend upon other pieces, and I think it would be good for us to have that opportunity to examine a final motion, and granted there may be some minor amendments to it that would come up at the next meeting, but it would give us that opportunity to answer those questions and be confident that our vote is reflecting that the position that we really want to take on.
And I guess, just for explanation, open meetings laws, I mean, we can't have this conversation until we get up here. So I don't, until I heard your guys' comments, I thought I was pretty set. But not to think that I wasn't prepared for the meeting, but I do value your opinions and the way you're thinking.
I mean, I don't want to particularly vote today either, but I will note that, I mean, none of this is new. I mean, all of these issues were addressed in both Midcontinent and staff's briefs. I just think I just think the issues have been pretty well uncovered at this point.
Certainly, Mr. Chair, if you wish to vote on those items and want to state clearly what each one is and present it, we can have that vote now.
Well, what I don't want to do is Shanghai anybody. I mean, it may be that I want to be helpful. I don't mind voting on it as a block, and I don't mind voting on it, each of the four components individually. What I don't want to do is, I mean, I don't want to have you and I agree on two things, which essentially shuts Colbeck out of the one thing he wants because they're dominoes or something. So if we want to vote on it as a block and it ends up going down 1-2, I mean, I'll live with that. But if it's helpful to, I mean, basically if all he wants is the quest rate, I'm willing to break him up so he can, you guys can beat me on the quest rate if you want to. If that's our area of disagreement, then let's break it up. Otherwise, let's keep it together.
Well, I will.
I'm coming.
Mr. Chair, I will tell you that when I have moved from my position too, from, and for those persons in the audience who are wondering what's going on, it's we don't sit down in our offices and the three of us gather and discuss this. We don't discuss these items until we are in an open meeting, and that that presents some obvious challenges for us and some obvious entertainment for you. I have to tell you, when I was coming up here, it was my intent to vote to deny the request for the exemption and require Midco to file a cost study conforming to our rules, and that means some challenges for Midco to switch over to the process. So that's where I was. I understand that what you are suggesting, there are some options and there are some very sensible ones there. I'm through the discourse that we're having now is what leads me to wonder whether I should remain intransigent or whether I should move to accept portions of yours.
Commissioner Colbeck, I'll make the offer to you. You and Mr. Rizlov were talking, but I mean, if you're comfortable with everything except the interim rate, we can break this up, and it may be that the quest rate has more support than the rate I'm seeking. Sure. In the motion. If that's helpful to you and gets you everything you want, with the exception of what the interim rate is, I'll break it into pieces. If you just don't like the whole thing, then let's not spend the time of breaking it up. We'll just, sure, you know.
Well, and I found Commissioner Hansen's comments completely intriguing because he had the motion that I was going to make, I think, too. So now I'm really torn whether to, because he basically read my motion. But I also have concerns about Mid-Continent's accounting after that. I do think that the rulemaking, and I'll just, you know, rulemaking is that's a good idea. The cost study to evaluate, that's a good idea. Denying, I'm for that. So I guess my two hang-ups are the interim rate and the waiver of the rules.
Well, I think we're really close then, because, and I don't, I mean, this is what you guys came up here with. I don't know if that's where you're at now, but that's what we get if component number two is the interim rate at the quest rate rather than the Midco cost study rate. So if you guys still want that, then let's just go through and defeat number two, and after we're done with number four, why don't you make a motion for the quest rate to be the interim rate?
And the other Ms. Kramer concerned me too with some of the questions that she had raised, but I guess
she concerns me all the time.
I know it. But Mr. Smith, I guess I'm going to ask you, do you have concerns about the way our motion is proceeding?
No, but I got to just tell you what I'm observing is that it, honestly, it just sounds like at least two of you guys might want to have a few days to sit and think about this after you've discussed it today. And I, with all due respect to Commissioner Johnson's observation, that's what I'm seeing here.
Mr. Chair, there have been times when I was in the legislature when I was forced to vote for things that I was not prepared to and totally comfortable for, but such is life, and you do have to get to a point where you either fish or cut bait, and I think we can well be at that point. You described a process just now of going through the four items. I think that's I think I know how that's going to end up, and I think that's the proper avenue at this juncture.
And Mr. Smith, I take very seriously what you mentioned, and I'd have a lot more nervousness about proceeding with a vote if my colleague. I think we're so in agreement on three of the four issues, and I think I can read the tea leaves on the fourth, that I just don't know what we get from waiting.
Well, and I'm not necessarily suggesting, it's just Commissioner Kolbeck asked me how what I was seeing, and that's what I saw, so I apologize.
Well, and I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Rizloff has got my left ear, and you've got my right ear. Like I said, I think I agree with Commissioner Johnson. I think we're pretty close. There's a couple things today that, you know, maybe a couple days, but I guess here we are. It's, as Commissioner Johnson said, this, it's all in the pre-filed. But let's go ahead with the motions and one at a time and see how they fall. If that's okay with Commissioner Johnson. I mean, one of us, I would think a decision like this can be made by one commissioner, but that's just my opinion. If one commissioner wants to wait, I'm more than willing to wait. So, but I know how I'm going to vote.
Well, unless there's any objection, you know, we will go ahead and break those into four pieces. That will have an added benefit of us being able to make sure we agree on the wording before we do. I mean, before we just read off, you know, 90 words. The first component of the motion was to deny Mid-Continent's exemption from developing, you know, company-based switched access rates. Is there any discussion on the revised motion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Hanson?
Aye.
Kolbeck?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. Component number two is to put into effect interim rates at the level requested, at the level requested by Mid-Continent in their cost study, subject to refund with interest. And in order to do that, waiving Commission Rules 2010-2704 and 2010-2710. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Hanson?
No.
Kolbeck?
No.
Johnson votes aye. Motion fails 1-2. Component number three, begin a cost study process, a legitimate cost study process, to fully test and evaluate the filed cost study with a filing fee and require as part of that process the filing of a tariff, as would be typical in that process. Any comments on the motion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Hanson?
Yes.
Kolbeck?
Yes.
Johnson votes yes. Motion carries 3-0. Motion number four is to redirect rulemaking 0502 from a general switched access docket to a specific CLEC rules docket, and additionally direct staff to provide a straw man proposal for the commission's consideration within 180 days. There's a formal rulemaking process after that, but I sort of view this as prior to that, just to allow a lot of discussion. And it may be that one needs to be tweaked. You know, Ms. Weiss, you know more about the rulemaking than I do. Okay? Comments or questions on that motion?
My only question, Mr. Chair, would be if 180 days, if staff is comfortable with 180-day period. Legislature's here, et cetera.
Good question.
Well, when you're talking staff, and because generally there's no ex parte with staff or with rulemaking, so are you including the three commissioners as part of that discussion to come up, or do you want staff to determine a policy? I don't think so. I mean, I'm just trying to figure out who are our players. Do you want us to
Well, I think the entity ultimately responsible would be the staff. But you're right, there are no ex parte concerns. I know I have relatively strong opinions. It sounds like Commissioner Kolbeck has already made his opinions clear. I plan to be in your office tugging on your ear as far as what I would like to see in a straw man. You and I can talk that way with a rulemaking process.
Right. And
but you'd have to do the – I mean, right. You'd have to pound away at the keyboard.
Right. Okay, well, that's. I just wasn't clear who was all going to be a part of this process. It was just John Thurber and I, or?
I just think before we can even, this needs to be a really big discussion.
It does. That's my concern.
And the problem is we've seen it with so many things. You just talk and you talk and you talk until you have a straw man, a straw person. And so, you know, ultimately somebody's got to take the slings and arrows of outrageous criticism, and that ends up being, you and Mr. Thurber with the straw man.
I thought you were going to say the commissioner.
Yeah. Oh, no, we'll disavow ownership the second it surfaces.
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure what else. We've got a lot going on, John, but, yeah, we can do that in 180 days.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
It does seem like an unfair timeline, but, man, I want to get these. I mean, I just think to avoid the onslaught of other filings, you know, if we could have this on, you know, the Thursday after next, that would be helpful. Commissioner Colbeck.
No, I agree. Time's of the essence on this. But, I guess 180 days. Is there any extensions to that? We could grant a 30-day extension. Do we have a backup plan, I guess, is what I'm asking. If session goes way awry and something drastic happens.
I mean, you picked the 180 days. I don't think there's any magical
okay
to that. So you can extend it or shorten it.
That should be plenty of time.
Other comments or questions? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Hanson?
Yes.
Colbeck?
Yes.
Johnson votes aye or yes. Motion carries 3-0. We have left unresolved. We have not put into place an interim rate. And I suppose since we haven't, I imagine that just ends up being the current rate. Does that appear to jive with your legal analysis, Mr. Smith?
Well, I think it does because you've denied the exemption and not approved another rate. So I think the current rate would remain in effect. But
all right.
Ms. Weiss, do you have observation?
So with that, you know, it doesn't sound like a further motion is necessary, but it certainly, if anybody wants to make one, they can. Otherwise, I think our business with this docket is completed. Does anybody disagree with that? With that, thanks very much to the parties. The final item on our agenda today, I believe, is in the matter of the failure of certain telecommunications companies to timely file the gross receipts tax. Question for the commission today is, shall the commission issue an order to show cause as to why the commission should not fine or suspend or revoke the COAs of each of the companies for failure to pay the requisite tax? This time we'll look to Deputy Executive Director Ms. Forney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioners, this is Heather Forney on behalf of staff, and this is a much less entertaining item on the agenda. What you have before you is a list of 16 telecommunication providers that have either not filed any of their gross receipts tax information or have filed their gross receipts tax revenues but have not paid the requisite tax associated with it. I've got the list broken down by type of company and what the issue happens to be with each. At this point, I would ask that you remove InPhone LLC, which is a long-distance provider that has not filed or paid.
Can you say that again? I'm sorry.
It's InPhone LLC. They're in that final group. This company has ceased doing business in the state and has relinquished their certificate of authority already. So with that, I would ask that you issue an order to show cause for failure to pay for the remaining 15 companies listed.
Do any of the companies have any representatives who wish to appear before the commission? We'll ask again, do any of the companies have any representatives who wish to appear before the commission? Hearing none, we'll open it to commission or advisor questions. Any comments or action?
Mr. Chairman, I'll move that the commission issue an order to show cause as to why the commission should not fine or suspend or revoke the certificates of authority of each of the companies for failure to pay the requisite gross receipts tax that pertaining to the list that has been provided and is docketed as part of the agenda, excluding InPhone LLC.
Motion has been made. No seconded being required. Is there any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Hanson?
Yes.
Colbeck?
Yes.
Johnson votes yes. Motion carries 3-0. I believe that complete. Is there any further business to come before the commission today? Hearing none, we'll stand adjourned.